Next case this morning, number two on the docket, is In re the Richard C. Sweezy Trust of 1990. Is the appellant ready to proceed?
I am, Your
Honor. Do you wish to reserve any time for rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor. I'd like to reserve 2 minutes, please.
All right. You may proceed.
Good morning, Your Honor. I'm Ben Vandenberg. I'm here on behalf of the appellant here, the Rayanne Sweezy, the PR of the estate of Richard H. Sweezy, here with co-counsel Angela Wishar. This case presents two important and prima facie issues in Washington. The first one is whether a TEDRA agreement that contains a mandatory, unconditional payment requirement, a annulment clause, and a clear merger clause is effective in amending a prior trust that has a survivorship requirement, or whether that survivorship requirement from the trust can be superimposed onto the TEDRA agreement, despite the fact that there's no reference to the survivorship clause in the TEDRA agreement, and despite the fact that it contradicts with these three clear terms.
Why should we reach a question about whether you can contract away someone else's trust document?
Well, Your Honor, I don't think we need to reach that question. The parties have stipulated that there's not an issue before the court about whether TEDRA allows parties to amend a trust. And, in fact, this court has reiterated that that's possible under the recent Henry Bernard decision. So I don't think that that issue needs to be relitigated. The question here is whether the evidence of manifest intent in this case is enough to show that the TEDRA agreement was intending to amend the trust survivorship requirement as to that specific unlawful distribution payment, or whether you can read that survivorship requirement in. So it's really specific to this individual case, Your Honor.
Well, is that mentioned in the intent section of the agreement?
What's that, Your Honor?
That purpose. To me it speaks to trying to resolve the issues that were brought by June, doesn't make any reference that I could find that it's purporting to change the beneficiary designations of residual heirs.
Oh, we completely agree, Your Honor. And there's a distinction between attempting to change the residual beneficiaries to the entire trust, res, and changing the allotment of one specific portion of the trust, res. That's fundamentally what this agreement did, and that's what it states on its face. It took the entire trust res, which was all subject to a survivability requirement and descendancy, limited group of distributees who were available, and it reallocated one small portion of that, and that's the unlawful distribution payment. And so we have never argued that the intent of the TEDRA agreement was to allow the estate of Richard H. Sweezy, which does not have the ability to be a distributee under the entire trust, to access the other quarter of the trust that's available. We've never made a claim for it. We've never argued for it. The argument is nuanced. It's that this was a reallocation under TEDRA of this specific payment provision. And that's evidence from the express language in the provisions themselves, Your Honor. The unlawful distribution payment provision uses the words shall be. And the very next sentence, as pointed out by opposing counsel, uses the words would be. That in itself evidences a clear distinction between one payment, the unlawful distribution payment, which shall be paid upon June's death, unequivocal, unconditional, and then the next sentence refers to the remainder of the trust, which would be divided between the parties. That would be is conditional language, and opposing counsel appropriately points out that that is intended to be a reference to a condition. But there's no condition to the first part.
Then certainly, if all of the sons are surviving at the time of her death, the residual clause, the survivorship clause, goes into effect, doesn't it? different result if he survives than if he doesn't survive?
Oh, certainly, Your Honor. It's more that this is an insurance clause.
So isn't the point here whether or not you contracted away the survivorship clause?
The issue is whether the three provisions read together show the intent to amend the survivorship clause as to this one portion of the trust distribution, the unlawful distribution payment only. And yes, did they contract away the survivorship clause as to that requirement? And our argument demonstrates that there are many ways they could have included that survivorship clause had the parties intended that the survivorship clause apply to this payment. They could have added a dependent clause at the beginning of that sentence that says, subject to section 3.4 of the trust, this shall be paid. They didn't. They could have made a reference that said, this trust, in conflicts between this TEDRA agreement and the trust language shall control. They didn't. Instead, they added a merger clause that says, only look to the TEDRA agreement when interpreting the rights of the parties. They could have included a statement that said, it is our intention to have this document be consistent with Dick's wishes. In fact, that's what they did in their prior TEDRA agreement, but they didn't include that language here. So the objective manifestations of intent that exist in this TEDRA agreement, they not only show that the parties intended for this payment to be an unconditional payment that was not subject to the survivorship requirement, and that that right would inure specifically to the heirs and beneficiaries, totally different group of distributees than descendants and survivors under the trust. But it also shows, because of the omission of the specific language that would have done what opposing counsel and respondents want this document to do, that that was never the intent.
But isn't the burden going the other direction to show an affirmative intent to amend the trust rather not to say we're taking by implication, since we didn't affirm the trust, that it must have been amended?
I'll concede, Your Honor, that we bear the burden to prove it. I would just argue that we've done so. But I think that the court, in making this determination and analyzing this contract, the guidance that this court has is to make a determination of what can you tell about what the parties cared about at the time. The context rule and bringing these things in, as respondents are attempting to do, it's not appropriate in this case. This court has a specific guidance on what needs to be done here, which is to look at this document and try to determine what was the intent of the parties on the day the TEDRA agreement was signed. And that intent can be discerned not only from the specific language they've included, but also from the language they've omitted.
So you think we can't look at context? We can't look at the trust document? We can't look at the nature of the lawsuit that the agreement settles?
Your Honor, I think that the Berg line of cases is clear, that the only time the court can look to that type of extrinsic evidence in order to determine intent is where there's a specific contractual provision that needs interpretation. The King case that's cited to by respondents for the proposition that you can walk past a merger clause and look at context, that case was a case that was attempting to, as Berg was, determine what a word meant.
But you're not really saying we can't look at the terms of the trust.
No, you have to look at the terms of the trust here, Your Honor. Yeah. What we're arguing and what we have been arguing is that you don't have to look at the survivorship rule and interpret this TEDRA agreement as being consistent with the trustor's original intent. That rule was changed in 1997.
Wasn't the purpose to restore the equalization of distribution that the trust contemplated?
That was one of the purposes, Your Honor. One of the other purposes, and the one that Rick signed on to the trust for, was to ensure that this unlawful distribution payment would find its way back to his heirs, and not just his descendants, because he had no descendants, Your Honor.
But he wasn't the only one getting a payment.
That's true, Your Honor. Gary Wood as well. They didn't know that at the time they signed the TEDRA.
Well, none of them knew, and the distributions to the other two brothers weren't identical, so wouldn't there be some equalization with respect to them?
Yes, Your Honor. The TEDRA anticipates that after the arbitration.
So the burden would necessarily, the clause would necessarily bind their heirs to that kind of distribution as well, so it had multiple purposes.
I agree that it had multiple purposes, Your Honor, absolutely.
Even if we agree.
Thank you.
May it please the Court, Ryan McBride for the respondents. Dick Sweezy's trust provided that his four sons should receive an equal distribution, but only if they survived June's death or had living descendants. The TEDRA agreement, which resolved June's claims, did not change that intent. It restored it. The TEDRA agreement must be interpreted like any other contract. We look to its terms and its context, Your Honor. Both its plain meaning and the surrounding circumstances show that the parties did not intend to give Rick or his heirs an absolute right to payment, separate and apart from his right to receive a distribution under Dick's trust. Since Rick was not entitled to receive a distribution under the terms of Rick's trust, he wasn't entitled to an equalizing distribution under the terms of the TEDRA agreement. Let's start with the plain language of the TEDRA agreement. It does not guarantee any of the brothers or their heirs shall receive any kind of payment whatsoever. It says that if they receive a distribution, it shall be equalized, and it provides a mechanism to make that determination, the arbitration. That obligation refers to and incorporates the requirements for a distribution as defined by Dick's trust. The TEDRA agreement uses the term distribution, which can only mean distribution under the terms of the trust. The TEDRA agreement is triggered upon June's death, just like the trust. The TEDRA agreement requires equalization, an equal share, just like Dick's trust. Same terminology, same timing, same purpose. The point of the provision was to ensure that when a distribution was made pursuant to the terms of the trust, it was equal, just like Dick wanted. Nothing in the TEDRA agreement shows an intent to divorce an equalizing distribution from the qualification to receive an underlying distribution under the trust. A moment on this point about the annulment clause, which is a miscellaneous provision that appears at the end of the TEDRA agreement, which provides that the rights and obligations under the agreement shall both obligate and benefit heirs, assigns, and the like. I think it's safe to say that these kinds of clauses don't have any independent operative effect. They don't, on their own, give any rights to anybody that aren't already provided for in the underlying contract. So the question under the annulment clause becomes, did Rick have a right to an absolute receipt of payment, whether or not he survived June? If he did, then the annulment clause could operate. But he didn't. So Rick's heirs and Rayanne have no rights that Rick didn't otherwise have under the TEDRA agreement. And because Rick had no right to receive a payment under the TEDRA agreement, the annulment clause doesn't do anything to help their position.
Sure, the other side would argue he actually had rights. They're even arguing they weren't contingent. Is your position there contingent rights as opposed to...
Under the TEDRA agreement, yeah. There were all kinds of provisions under the TEDRA agreement. This part we're arguing about, the equalized distribution part, is only one of many things that the TEDRA agreement intended to accomplish, perhaps the primary component of which was to ensure that the three brothers were replaced by an independent professional trustee. And that's what happened under the TEDRA agreement, along with, I think, the other purpose of June's lawsuit, which was to ensure that all the trust's res were ultimately divvied out in an equal manner, which is, of course, what Dick wanted, and that's what the equalizing provision of the TEDRA agreement provided for. But, yeah, there was a lot of other things that that agreement did. The annulment clause had a lot of operative effect, could even benefit Rick's heirs in many other ways. But it certainly, and I think the briefing kind of confuses this, that provision is not coupled with the equalizing distribution provision. It is a miscellaneous provision at the end of agreement, just like we see in lots of agreements, that is intended to ensure that someone can enforce a signatory's right under the agreement. So the question then comes full circle. What rights did the signatory have under the TEDRA agreement itself? Because Rick had no rights, because he did not survive June, at least under the equalizing distribution provision, neither do his heirs. We can look to context. The merger agreement, of course, doesn't bar this court from looking to context.
And is that because it's ambiguous, or what's the test?
Of course, this court doesn't need ambiguity in order to look at context. If the issue is, as counsel has suggested, that we need to find a word that we're trying to interpret to look at context, then I'm not sure that's right. But even if that's right, I think the key word in the equalizing distribution provision is distribution. It doesn't say anything about payments or judgments. It says distributions. And so I think the plain meaning of that means the same thing as distributions in Dick's trust. But if there were any doubt or ambiguity, or if we wanted context to confirm that, we can look at these other things. And they all come back around to the same place. June brought suit. She did not seek an immediate payment for herself. She didn't seek a payment on behalf of any of the other beneficiaries. Rick never joined in that claim, never sought any sort of payment on behalf of himself. The whole point was to ensure that Dick's assets or the trust assets were preserved so they could be used and distributed in accordance with Dick's wishes. That was the intent of the TEDRA complaint that June brought, and that's precisely what the TEDRA agreement accomplishes. And I strongly resist the notion that it was the drafter's burden to say something explicit about preserving any of the terms of the underlying trust in a TEDRA agreement when the whole question is whether the TEDRA agreement was intended to alter or amend the underlying trust. If anyone needed to be very explicit about something, it was them. And if they intended for Rick or any other beneficiary to have a right to payment outside of the ordinary flow of distribution under the trust, they should have been very explicit about it, and they weren't. And they weren't because that wasn't the intent. Now, unless Your Honors have any other questions about the contract issue, I just want to say something very quickly on the attorney's fees. TEDRA, of course, allows for an award of attorney's fees. It's an equitable decision on behalf of the trial court. They're allowed to look at any facts that they deem relevant for purposes of an award of attorney's fees. And, of course, the standard of review is an abuse of discretion. And there was no abuse of discretion here, Your Honors. The trial court concluded that the estate's claims were meritless. There was nothing novel about the estate's claims. The claim was prosecuted entirely on and for the benefit of the estate. It didn't seek to benefit the trust generally or any other beneficiary to the trust. And, of course, at the end of the day, the claim did nothing more than deplete the assets of the trust, and it continues to do so in this appeal. And the trial court plainly felt that equity mandated a shifting of fees so that the estate or the trust did not have to bear the burden of the defense costs related to the estate's meritless claims. We ask that this court affirm the Superior Court and also award us our fees on appeal.
You mentioned the burden of the drafters. Who was the drafter of the document, and did that play into the award of fees flow?
The fees are awarded under the statute, so I'm sorry.
But in terms of the court burden, was there discussion or concern about one side having drafted the document? And no,
I don't think so, and I don't know if the record indicates who had the primary responsibility for drafting the TEDRA agreement. It was signed by June and two of the brothers, not the Gary family component. Thank you, Your Honors.
You have 2 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honors. First off, the question of whether the word distribution is either a mirror to the trust or is now suddenly an ambiguous term, that's a new argument today. And that's not the right word. The word distribution that exists in the sentence that we are discussing in the unlawful distribution payment section is actually talking about the unlawful distribution distributions previously that had already occurred. It's not talking about future distributions. That word distribution in the second sentence that talks about distributions we've stipulated is talking about conditional distributions. So that's not an issue, and it's not reason to look to context. We're asking this court to interpret the word shall be, interpret the meaning of an annulment clause that clearly expands the scope of distributees, and interpret a merger clause. That's it.
So what if they all had unauthorized distributions? Did the trust have a right to, if any of them predeceased June, to reclaim those? The agreement doesn't seem to speak to any waiver of any right to recapture.
Your Honor, we've argued below and in our briefing here that the absence of some sort of a payment scheme like that for a repayment indicates that the parties intended this to be permanent. In fact, David and Paul claimed these amounts as income on their taxes, and there's no evidence that there was any intention for this money to go back. And that ties directly into a point that opposing counsel just made, which is he's saying that we have to prove that there's this express intent to try to amend the trust. But the most fundamental thing that the trust did was hold property for June, and this TEDRA agreement allowed David and Paul to keep it. What better expression is there that the intention was to amend the trust? On the attorney fees, briefly, if I may, this case will be an outlier if you allow this decision to stand. There is no similar case on the record. There's never even been one analyzed, reversed, or considered. That is not the intention of TEDRA. There's a 20-year precedent legislatively and jurisprudence to have this be an equitable decision. So we'd ask that you reverse.
Thank you.